Hi, Tyler Balls here. I don't suppose I need to remind you that each time. Who else? Well, it could be. For Econ 4010, I browbeat one of my colleagues, Chris Lewis, into providing the online lectures for the 4010 online course. So I suppose I do need to remind you that this is your instructor, Tyler Balls. Welcome to Chapter 14 on Exchange Rate Determined. Let me see. What chapter are we on? We're not on Chapter 13 yet. We're still on Chapter 12. This is Chapter 12 on Exchange Rate Determination. We introduced the foreign exchange market in Chapter 11. Talked about a lot of things, including the notion of covered interest arbitrage, but now we're into Chapter 11 on Exchange Rate Determination. What is it that determines this all-important economic variable we call the exchange rate? A couple things I want to remind you, though, before we get too far into this. For any two currencies, there is only one exchange rate. However, there are two ways of expressing that exchange rate. Let me say that again, because it causes some confusion as we go through this chapter. For any two currencies, there is only one exchange rate. But there are two ways of expressing that exchange rate. Let's take the dollar and the yen. There's one exchange rate. We could express it. Let's say it is. That one exchange rate is 100 yen to a dollar. In saying the exchange rate that way, we're quoting the price of the dollar. $1 costs 100 yen. Well, mathematically, that is the same exact thing as saying 1 yen equals 1 cent, or 1/100th of a dollar. Again, there's only one exchange rate between the yen and the dollar. But there are two methods of expressing that exchange rate, either the price of the dollar in terms of the yen, or the price of the yen in terms of the dollar, either 100 yen per dollar or 1 cent per yen. And often we have to be careful, and that's true as well in chapter, I should have made that point in chapter 11, but that point needs to be remembered, that, again, you can quote an exchange rate or express an exchange rate two different ways. Now, what determines the exchange rate? In thinking about this, we want to think of three separate time periods: short run, medium run, and long run. And the factors that determine the exchange rate are different in those three different time periods. I'm going to give you a summary, and then we'll go into more detail, particularly concerning the short and the long run. But, and you can write this down if you're taking notes. You can, in a mathematical sense, you want to think of, in the short run, you want to think of the exchange rate, we'll just call it E, is a function, that is, mathematically, it's a function of, or in other words, determined by, R, which we'll let R stand for the domestic interest rate, R star as the foreign interest rate, and the third variable is the expectations of the future exchange rate, or in other words, the expectation of E, the exchange rate. So in the short run, it's relative interest rates. It's R versus R star and the expected exchange rate that affect the exchange rate. This is called the financial or the asset approach to exchange rate determination. In the short run, it's capital flows. Now remember, people exchange rates, or in other words, buy exchange rates. Let me say that again. Entities, businesses, people, governments, buy exchange rates. Yeah, let me try that a third time. People buy currencies for different reasons. One is to trade in order to buy each other's goods and services. Two would be to buy each other's assets. And a third might just be to hold on to that currency is in anticipation that its price change. Well, in the short run, we want to think of capital flows. That is, individuals of different nations or businesses in different nations or even governments in different nations buying each other's assets, which, and the demand for each other's assets depends upon relative interest rates. So that's why, in the short run, exchange rates are dominated, or movements in exchange rates are dominated by movements in relative interest rates and expectations of changes in the exchange rate. Nah, we'll come back to that when we talk about the short run in much more detail later. But that's in the short run, it's relative interest rates and expectations that affect the exchange rate. Now, in the intermediate or medium run, it's relative incomes. E is a function of Y, where Y stands for domestic income, or real GDP. Y star stands for foreign income, or interest, foreign income, or real GDP. So it's relative, it's changes in income. And the idea is that changes in income affect demand for imports. And change in demand for imports affects the demand for exchange rates. Let's say the U.S. economy is growing rapidly. There's a boom in the U.S. relative to the rest of the world. If our incomes are rising, RY is rising relative to the rest of the world, or in other words, Y star, we're demanding more of all goods, including imports. So we're buying more goods, say, from Japan. In order to buy these Japanese goods, we need to first buy yen. So as our economy booms, we buy more yen, that'll bid the price of the yen up. Or, the same thing, bid the price of the dollar down. So a rapid increase in our incomes would cause the dollar to depreciate. Well, finally, in the long run, the exchange rate is a function of P and P star, where P stands for the price level. In the long run, E is determined by relative prices. And we'll come back and talk about that based on the notion of purchasing power parity. But as a summary right now, in the long run, it's primarily relative prices, which makes some intuitive sense. A currency, even domestically, a currency's value is determined by the price level. It is changes in the price level that cause the domestic value of a currency to change. That's how we define the value of domestically, how we define the value of a dollar. And let me remind you, there's two ways of thinking about the value of a dollar. It's domestic value in terms of what it'll purchase, or it's international exchange value relative. That means what relative to how much of a foreign currency it'll purchase. The value of the dollar domestically is defined in terms of how many goods and services it'll purchase. If prices are going up rapidly, in other words, we're having inflation, what does that do to the domestic value of the dollar? It's going down. Well, you would think if its domestic value is going down, then ceteris paribus, its value relative to another currency would also decrease, and that's true. So a rapid increase in our price level would depreciate the dollar. Now what if, just comparing the US dollar to the British pound, if the US dollar, if domestic prices are rising rapidly, that is US prices are rising rapidly, and so are prices in the UK, then both of the currencies are losing value domestically, and there's nothing to say that their international exchange value will change. And in fact, as we'll demonstrate, if both prices are going up at the same rate, both price levels are going up at the same rate, then the exchange rate value of the two currencies will not change. So in the long run, prices determine exchange rates, or I should say relative prices. But going to one step behind the scenes, and this causes some confusion in this chapter, I know. Relative productivity growth rates affect prices. And so we often think of how productivity growth rates affect the exchange rates. Everything else remains the same. Rapid productivity growth will decrease the domestic price level, which will have the effect of appreciating the domestic currency. So high productivity growth reduces prices, when we know the effect of lower prices is to increase the value of a currency domestically and in terms of its international exchange value. Well, let's go. Let's focus first on the long run. And by the way, we haven't even called up our slides. It's hard. My sense is it's harder to listen to me. It's hard to listen to me anyway, if you don't have something to look at. So make sure you call up the slides for this chapter, for chapter 12, and which I'm doing as we speak. I'm going to hesitate here a second while I get a drink. I hope that's not too noisy as I get a drink. Well, the first two or three slides just tell us, make a list of all the factors that affect the exchange rate. But then we start in slide, let's start in slide four, where we break it down into short, medium, and long run. So in the short run, exchange rates are dominated by financial transfers. These are, what that means is purchases and sales of assets across borders. And these purchase and sell of assets depend upon differences in interest rates. And, good point, your real interest rates is what matter, not nominal interest rates. It's the real return. So if our interest rates go up in the United States, real interest rates go up relative to other nations, folks want to invest here. We'll attract capital inflows, take advantage of these higher real interest rates or higher real returns. So internationally, folks are trying to buy dollars to buy our assets, U.S. assets. That'll bid the price of the dollar up. So there's a positive relationship between real interest rates and the value of that nation's currency. Real interest rates go up, that value of that nation's currency goes up. A lot of intuition here. Our interest rates go up, individuals and businesses around the world, ceteris paribus, would want to invest more here. In order to invest more here, they have to buy dollars, bid the price of the dollar up. The other factor that dominates in the short run, or determines interest rate in the short run, as we mentioned, is expectations. If you expect, if around the world there's an expectation that dollars will increase in value, well, folks will want to, in the rest of the world, want to buy dollars, wait for it to go up in value, and then sell it in terms of their own currency. Foreign exchange is an asset like unto stocks or bonds. Since its value changes, speculators can try to make money by holding on to a currency while it's appreciating, then sell it later. In the medium run, in slide 4, it notes that exchange rates are determined by economic cycles. In other words, that's why I mentioned, if our incomes are growing rapidly, we'll buy more imports, that'll depreciate the currency. In the long run, we see inflation rates, that is, price levels. It could also be affected by investment profitability, by some other factor other than just interest rates. Consumer tastes, real incomes, productivity, trade policy. Trade policy, how does trade policy affect exchange rates? Well, if we impose trade restrictions, well, I say it this way, if the United States imposes significant import barriers, how would that affect the value of the dollar? Well, if we impose import barriers, there'll be less imports, so U.S. residents are buying less foreign currency. That will decrease the price of foreign currency, or the same thing, increase the value of the dollar. Slide 6 just gives us a little graphical interpretation of short versus long run movements. Short run is this up and down movement over short periods of time, but there's some overall long run trend in the exchange rate. When we think about the long run, we're asking what determines this trend, what they call here in this graph, the long run equilibrium path. What's the overall trend? In the short run, we're going to be up and down movements around that trend. Now we're just going to go through a number of slides where we just think about factors that can affect the exchange rate. And often you want to just think in terms of how will a change in this factor affect the supply and demand for dollars or the supply and demand for foreign currency. Now, one of the facts that's useful to remember, think of it from the dollar's perspective. A demand for dollars in the foreign exchange market is the same thing as a supply of foreign currency. Or, to say it another way, the demand for foreign currency is the same thing as the supply of dollars. So when thinking about how a particular change may affect supply and demand, remember that the supply of one currency in the foreign exchange market is the demand for another. If a U.S. resident goes to the foreign exchange market because to sell dollars to buy foreign currency in order to buy an import item, when you walk in, when this U.S. resident walks to the foreign, just think of a geographically located foreign exchange market. This U.S. importer walks up to that foreign exchange trader and says, "Look, I'm here to sell dollars and buy yen in order to buy a Toyota from the Japanese auto producer. I'm here to sell dollars, buy yen." Well, which is the person doing? Is that person supplying dollars or demanding yen. Well, of course, that person's doing both. You can't supply dollars and buy yen. Supplying dollars and buying yen, you're doing both. One's the other side of the coin of the other. Buying yen, demanding yen, is the same thing as supplying dollars. Well, back to slide 7. Factors influencing exchange rates. And these are long run factors. Medium to long run. We mentioned a country with a faster economic growth rate will have a depreciating currency. Why? Well, because as we import more, we're demanding their currency, that bids the value of their currency up, the dollar down. We see a picture of that in slide 8. Now, slide 9. Based on this notion of purchasing power parity, a currency, if the U.S. price level is going up, well, what couple different levels to think about this. If the U.S. price level is going up, we know from just basic macroeconomic principles, if the domestic price level is going up, the domestic value of the currency is going down. Its purchasing power is going down. Well, you would think intuitively that if the domestic value is going down relative to some other currency, international exchange value would go down. In other words, rising prices, not only does the dollar lose value domestically, but it would also depreciate. And it gives some other explanation here. If our prices are going up, we're going to be buying more foreign... Our foreign goods are now more attractive. As we buy more foreign goods, we demand their currencies, bid the price of their currencies up, that devalues the dollar. Slide 10. This is a more difficult one. But a change in relative productivity levels. The connection here is the effect on the price level. If productivity is going up rapidly, everything else remains the same, prices will go down because, by definition, increase in productivity means we'll be able to produce a good at a lower cost. That should translate into lower prices. We know that lower prices, ceteris paribus, will appreciate the value of the currency on the international exchange markets. So, a high productivity growth rate, which leads to lower prices, will have the tendency to appreciate that nation's currency. No more, no less. But also, I guess there's a little more. It says if productivity gains are passed on as lower prices, they encourage exports and lower imports. So you can also think of this in just in terms of the effect on exports and imports. Lower prices, more folks around the world will want to buy our goods. There's an increase in imports in order to buy U.S. goods. They first have to buy dollars. That'll bid the value of the dollar up. And we get to see a picture of that in slide 11. Some other factors that affect the exchange rate. Tastes, preferences, trade barriers, all of those work through affecting supply and demand for goods and services across borders. And if you can translate in how a particular factor affects exports and imports, you can usually determine how it would affect the exchange rate. For example, in slide 12, if there's an increase in demand for imports, looking at this, say, from the U.S. perspective, because our preferences turn towards trendy European goods, for example. We're buying more foreign goods, European goods. We have to first buy euros. That'll bid the euro up, the dollar down. Well, now we want to spend a little bit of time in more detail talking about how relative prices affect a nation's, or affect the exchange rate. And we're in slide 14, but you may also want to turn to a discussion of this that starts on page 376. So purchasing power parity concept is based on the law of one price, which says that for a traded good, unless there are some sort of government intervention like a tariff, or this good will have one price, The only difference in price would be reflected by transportation costs. Otherwise, there's the chance to buy the good where it's cheap and sell it where it's expensive and make a profit. For example, if oil is $50 in Houston and $60 in New Orleans, you could buy the oil in Houston at $50, sell it in New Orleans at $60, and make $10 on every barrel you could buy. But this process of buying it in Houston will bid the price in Houston up, and the process of then selling it in New Orleans will drive the price down until we have the same price of oil in New Orleans and Houston. The only reason the two prices may differ is because if there's some transportation cost differences. Well, based on this, if you extend it to from one good to all goods, you can lead to the result that exchange rates should end up making prices equal across countries. The exchange rate, and let me give you another example so we can see this. If, say, I'm going to look and see if there's an example in the book, but let's just say that the price of oil is $50 now again in Houston. You may want to write these numbers down as we go through this example. $50 in Houston. And let's say that the yen price of a dollar is 100. 100 yen equals a dollar. What's going to be the price of, ignoring transportation cost, what's going to be the price of the oil in Tokyo in terms of yen? Well, it'll be $50 times 100, or 5,000 yen. 5,000 yen will equal a barrel of oil. Now, what would if that weren't the case, if the price of oil were $50 in Houston and it cost 100 yen to a dollar, but for some reason, say, the price of oil in Tokyo was 10,000 yen, just think what you could do. You could buy oil in Houston for $50, right? You could then sell it in Tokyo. Let's say it's 10,000 yen. You could sell it at 10,000 yen. You could convert your yen back to dollars at a rate of 100 yen to a dollar, so 10,000 yen would give you $100. So you start with $50. You buy oil, $50 a barrel. You sell it in Houston, sell it in Tokyo for 10,000 yen. By assumption, the exchange rate's 100 yen to a dollar, so you can convert your 10,000 yen back to dollars. At that rate, it would give you $100. So you'd make $50 on every barrel of oil. Again, we're ignoring transportation costs, but ignoring transportation costs, you could make $50 on every barrel of oil. How many barrels of oil would you like to buy and sell if you could make $50 on every barrel you buy and sell? Well, you and a lot of other people would be buying and selling a lot of oil. Well, this risk, this chance for a riskless profit wouldn't exist if the price of either the exchange rate has to go up or the relative prices have to change until, for example, let's just say the price of oil goes down in Tokyo to $5,000. And then notice what we would have. The price of oil in Houston at $50. Times the exchange rate, that is the price of the dollar of 100 yen, equals the price of oil in Tokyo. And that is our purchasing power parity exchange, purchasing power parity formula. Given the way we've defined the exchange rate, and you have to be careful in expressing the purchasing power parity because you get a different formula depending upon how you define the exchange rate. But if we've defined the exchange rate as yen per dollar, let's call that E, then our purchasing power parity formula is P, which is the domestic price level, times E, the exchange rate, equals P star, which is the foreign price level. That's one way of thinking about the exchange rate. And if we take that equation and solve for E, we get E equals P star divided by P. Now, just to clear this up, if we define the exchange rate as the price of the yen, which in our instance it would be 10, which would be 1 cent in our example. So if we define the I forgot to turn my phone off. Hang on here a second. Okay, where were we? Sorry for the interruption. So if we define the exchange rate as the price of the dollar, which would be in terms of yen, which would be 1 cent, then remember the price of the oil is $50 in Houston. It's 5,000 yen in Tokyo. If we let the $50 equal P and the 5,000 yen equals P star, then we would have to multiply P star by the exchange rate defined as the price of the yen, which is 1 cent. So P star times E, in this instance, again, we're defining E differently. We're defining the exchange rate as the dollar price of the yen. So P star times E would equal P, where in the particular numbers I gave you would be P star is 5,000 multiplied by 0.01, that is the 1 cent per yen, would give us the $50 in the U.S., so that our formula would hold. So depending on that formula, depending on how we define the exchange rate, we get the purchasing power parity formula. So what that means, now let me, because I know there are some questions on the quiz about this, and probably questions on the exam. Let's first define E as the dollar price of foreign exchange. All right? For our example, like 1 cent. Then, if that's our definition of the exchange rate, the dollar price of yen, or the dollar price of foreign exchange, the purchasing power parity formula can be expressed as P equals E, the exchange rate, times P star. P equals E P star, which, if we solve, then we have E, the exchange rate, equals the ratio of P to P star. So when we define, I'm going to summarize two formulas for you. When we define the exchange rate as the dollar price of foreign exchange, we can write E equals P divided by P star. If we define the exchange rate as the foreign exchange price of the dollar, so in our instance, 100 yen per dollar, we end up with the exchange rate so defined equals to P star over P. And those are two ways of thinking about the purchasing power parity formula. And it gives you, this is, my discussions, I think, it's similar, but I think in some ways, I think it's more clear than the discussion given on page 380. But based on that, you can figure out how changes in relative prices affect the exchange rate. If E equals P over P star, you can use simple mathematics to figure out how a change in P of 10% given a change in P star of 10%, one way or the other, will affect E. I think you can always figure that out. So just remember, if E is defined as the dollar price of foreign exchange, the formula is E equals P over P star. If the exchange rate is defined as the foreign exchange price of the dollar, then E equals P star over P. All right. Well, where does that leave us in terms of our slides? In fact, I think maybe this is a good point. I've already gone too long, but let me just finish this, and this is kind of a large, long lecture. But that's the notion of purchasing power parity. And the prediction of purchasing power parity is that exchange rates will move in the long run relative to changes in prices. Now, again, the purchasing power parity will more closely hold just for a price index that reflects the price of traded goods, but it also holds roughly for overall price level. That is, exchange rate movements will reflect relative movements in the overall price level. And that's what we're seeing here in slide 15. Well, moving now to the short run. We mentioned that in the short run, exchange rates can be best thought of, or movements in the exchange rate can are primarily determined by purchase and sales of foreign assets, residents of one nation buying and selling assets of another. And as such, they reflect changes in real interest rates, and we can also think of exchange rates being purchased by as an asset in and of themselves. So individuals are buying currencies expecting the price to change. If we all expect, in the United States, if we all determine that the euro is going to increase in value, what would you want to do as a speculator? Well, you buy euros, hold on to them. When the euro goes up in terms of dollars, then you sell it, convert back to dollars, and you'll make you can make some money. Let's say that to begin with, there's an even exchange rate, $1 per euro. But you think the euro is going to go up in value. That is, it's going to cost one. It's going to be $1.25 per euro. So you buy at $1 per euro. You buy 10 euros. You later exchange them back. Each euro gives you $1.25. So 10 of them will give you $12.50. Is that right? Yeah. And so you can make money by speculating in the foreign currency market. The last thing, I'm going to leave you to think about forecasting. The last item, let's just stare a little bit at slide 19. There is this concept of overshooting. That is, short-run exchange rates are volatile, and they appear to move. If there's some change out there, say the exchange rate is what it is, and there's some change, say, in relative interest rates that would cause the exchange rate to move, and let's say it's a permanent change in interest rates, and so you would expect some permanent change in the exchange rate, but in the short run it appears that the exchange rate will move more than you would predict based on the fundamental change in interest rates. And that phenomenon is known as overshooting. That is, interest rates in the short run can overshoot the long run, their long run change. So in terms of slide 19, let's say we start at A, and there's some fundamental change that results in a new equilibrium dollar per pound of C. That's going to be the movement. In the long run, the exchange rate, the dollar per pound, needs to go from A to C. But to get there, it may, in the short run, overshoot to B, and then to C. And this is due, one explanation is just the differences in the short run elasticity of supply in the exchange rate. There's a more complex explanation, which we won't get into. Well, I think we'll stop at that point.